It's December 20th, 2016, and this is Inside Out, The Naked Truth, coming to you live from the Santa Cruz Mountains of California at Lupin Lodge, where clothing is optional.
But the truth is always naked.
Yummy. I'm Errol Strider.
And I'm Rochelle Alicia Strider. And we welcome you once again to our home at Lupin Lodge. We invited you over tonight for some conversations about the human condition and what to make of it. Sprinkled with laughter, good music, and hopefully a few surprises.
Our show is sponsored by our good friend and spirit brother, Jeremy Bead, that we have known for like 40 years, more than that, Rochelle's saying.
I know you for 42 years.
We've known him for a long time. He's from Kansas, and we actually developed a wonderful relationship with his mom.
Who I just absolutely adore. She's like the true meaning of Christian, in the most beautiful sense of the word. She lives her faith. She lives it every day, every moment. She lives in a prayerful state that is so clean and so pure. And I really love her a lot.
Isn't that something? It's good because, oh, Jesus, is tonight's phrase of the week. Oh, Jesus.
Or, oh, Jesus.
Oh, Jesus.
Which is how you hear it the most.
That's right.
May I say something about that?
Yeah, then I'll say something.
I'm going to say something, and then he's going to say something.
We will both have said something about
after
that.
After all of that.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so, oh, Jesus. Do I speak that name in frustration or blessing? And who do I call out to? A wise Jewish guy? A son of God? Which by my tracking, we all are, because he existed to teach us who we are, sons and daughters of God. And if God be love, then we are love. And I wish to call forth love every moment. So whether in frustration or blessing, I will be reminded when I say, oh, Jesus, that what I call forth is who I am and what I want. Love. Oh, Jesus.
Well, the term, oh, Jesus, can be used in a variety of ways, as you kind of implied. For example, oh, Jesus, what am I going to get my wife for Christmas?
I want to know the same thing.
Yeah, that was this morning's oh, Jesus. Or, oh, Jesus, my in-laws are coming for dinner and they're vegans. Or, oh, Jesus, what on earth have we let ourselves in for? What with the climate change, a Trump presidency, and no clear antidote for greed in sight?
Oh, Jesus.
Or, oh, Jesus, by the way, how can we establish peace on earth and goodwill towards humans in the face of overwhelming multinational amoral corporations? Oh, Jesus, what did you mean when you said the meek shall inherit the earth? Oh, Jesus, how do you feel when people not only take your name in vain, but actually slaughter other people in that very same name? Oh, and one more thing. Oh, Jesus, how can I serve myself and others? Oh, that feels better, Jesus. Yeah. So that's what we're going to do tonight. We're going to explore the oh, Jesus possibility and what that can mean to us in light of the fact that this is Hanukkah coming up. And Jesus is always big at the Hanukkah celebrations. Not.
He brought wine.
And Christmas is coming. So it's our time to be able to take a look at what I like to think of as the Jesus phenomenon. Whatever else it is, Jesus is a phenomenon. He's a stimulus to shopping phenomenon, for starters. Especially when he was a baby.
When he was born.
The baby Jesus is good for commerce. What can I tell you? And then there's this ostensible life. And then there's this quite dramatic ported event that he died, of course, and was crucified, and he was later seen at a Howard Johnson's near Nazareth.
Oh, my God, I'm going to die. This Isn't is that so horrible? Bad. That was terrible. That was the worst joke worst. He ever came up with.
I'm sorry.
And that's saying something.
I don't know. I get in this silly mood when I look at Rochelle for more than 10 minutes, and that's what's happening. The resurrection. I have been very fortunate, just to get a little serious for a minute, to have been immersed in this phenomenon.
Been resurrected.
I'm sorry. What?
You've been very blessed to have been resurrected.
I was resurrected. Let me just cut in with that little story. I've told this before, but I played a character who was resurrected. It was in Camelot, and I was one of the jousting guys, one of the knights. He knocked me off my horse. Ooh, that hurt. And killed my character. Then he came on stage and he resurrected me.
Oh, Jesus.
Wow. As a character, I'm lying there. So I'm doing this character study of being dead.
Being dead.
Exactly. And then I thought about all the actors we have seen play dead people. And my heart went out to them. What are they thinking about? What can they use as emotional recall? What is possible when you're playing dead? What would you think about? What do you think you think
you
about?
You can't think about anything. That's just it. You're dead. Just stop thinking. Even like your breath has to get so quiet.
Really?
And then you realize that you can't really move very much because you're dead. So you got to be super still.
Right.
And that's all there is to it.
You have to be super still. Hmm. That's good.
If a dead person moved, I'd be very hysterical.
Not only did I play a dead person, I played a wounded warrior for real on that same show. There's a scene where I'm one of the guys that comes out and puts Arthur's armor on him. But just before that, there had been a fight scene with like real metal swords, and I choked, and the other guy's sword wrapped me across the top of my knuckles, and I started bleeding. But imagine the reality of it. I come on stage, one of his bleeding knights, and I'm putting armor on the guy who's playing Arthur, and the blood is all over the armor. I was thinking, this is good. This is good. I'll play a resurrection and a bloody warrior in one show.
Oh, Jesus. Obviously, he came out wounded.
And I was wounded. So, when I was starting my spiritual journey...
But wait a second.
What?
Why are you telling us about resurrection here? This is Christmas.
Okay, hold that. So imagine it's a movie and he's just resurrected. Mm-hmm. And then there's a stop and it comes on the screen 33 years earlier. Like they do in movies. And then you're back. It's 33 AD. Of course, they couldn't really say it was AD because they didn't know it was AD at that time. And they didn't know it was B.C. because the A.D. and the B.C. kind of came along at the same time.
It would have to be whatever the Jewish year was.
Yeah, 5,300.
It's 5,777 right now.
So it'd be like 55,000. Back to 55,412. And the baby Jesus is being
crying.
Born. And then he matures. He ends up being a powerful influence. One of the questions, as you noticed, that I asked him is, what's with all this terrible stuff that's been done in his name? So here is a very interesting thing. There is a passage in the Bible where Jesus says, whoever two or more gathered in my name, there I am in their midst. Except I looked up the word name in the Greek, and it really is derived from the word nature. So what we have then is wherever two or more are gathered in my nature, there I am in their midst. So let's see if we can feel that. Thank you.
Who sang that?
Sissel. She's Norwegian, I believe. Pie Jésus by Sissel. It's really beautiful, and it's a wonderful way to set the tone for the soft side of God. Pie Jésus. That's the name of the song. And what that means is merciful Lord. And it goes on, who lifted the world's sins, grant them peace. God's Lamb, who lifted the world's sins, grant them everlasting peace. I wish you peace. I'm going to go on record and say, I don't believe that Jesus came here to lift us out of sin. I think that was a departure from the whole intention of the phenomenon, on the assumption that there was an incarnation of a direct line to source that somehow was able to integrate with a mortal person and showed up as Yeshua ben Joseph. What I've come to believe, this was a life that revealed the true nature of source, of God. And by looking at that life and being aware of it, no matter what people may think about Jesus or believe in it or not believe in him or whatever, most people have a positive regard when they think about him. Yeah, the actual guy. It evokes a sense of a good spirit, at the very least, of a kind presence, of a truthful speaker, whether he was Son of God or not. It was a life that exemplified the qualities of life that in our hearts, I believe most of us want. In that sense, I can agree with the song, grant them peace, grant us love, grant us a deeper awareness of our capacity to realize the love that we are, that there are lights that come into the planet that show us what that looks like and feels like. Amen.
Oh, Jesus.
That's what I'm thinking about as I ponder the presence of this phenomena into our life. My experience, I started in the Bible, but then I was moved to a direct experience of Jesus when I realized he was the truth. It was real for me. He was real. In spite of my Jewish upbringing, and my first reaction to Jesus was, what? I don't think so. And then somehow that phenomenon broke through into my consciousness and revealed itself to me as this amazing presence, a gift from God, if you will. And then I was fortunate enough to find these great teachings, the Urantia book, Course in Miracles, and the latest is Love Without End, Jesus Speaks.
Interesting that in the name of this show, Oh Jesus, I feel like we're almost being asked to speak our truth in terms of how we met him, what that meant. I had a visitation. Like Errol, I was brought up in Judaism, and to a lot of Jews, the name Jesus means someone's going to convert you, hurt you, do bad things to you, as it has been for a long time. That's not necessarily, doesn't evoke peace. It evokes a kind of double talk, speaking out of one side of your mouth about love and on the other side of your mouth, I'm not included in that love. There was that. That was a baggage to carry around with me. So there I am, find myself in Israel of all places, in a little hut in a eucalyptus grove and an old kibbutz that had been modernized so that these old little huts were kept for the students or volunteers, of which I was one. And I had a cold. I was a macrobiotic intern. I understood not taking drugs and things, so I was very clean. Close my eyes, and all of a sudden this bright light comes into the room. My first reaction is being pissed at my roommate for turning the light on when I'm trying to sleep. And then all of a sudden, the light hits me, and I hear these words, I am to be your teacher, you're to have no other. To say the least, that was kind of startling, because there was this white light talking. I never had any drugs, so either that or I'd lost my mind completely. And I told the white light, if you think I'm going to become a Christian, you're crazy. You know what he said? I will teach you the way you are teachable. Now, I felt more love from those words than I ever had from any words that anybody has spoken to me of love. I had such license to just be me. I didn't have to do anything other than open myself up to that love and allow it to come through. But it takes a lot of learning.
Both of those things make me feel joyous, really. It's a joy that is made available to the world. Pentatonics again.
Oh, God,
I couldn't resist playing another Pentatonics. And the name of that song, can you guess?
Joy to the World.
You got it.
Oh, I'm so glad I never win anything.
Well, you won that. So it's good to be able to, oh, Jesus, I almost forgot. Rabbi Greenberg wanted to come and talk to us tonight. Sorry, Rabbi, hi. Well, it's good to be here. Oh, Jesus, I prefer to call him by the way he was called when he was walking around. They would say, oh, Yeshua. Like one of the apostles, they'd be walking down the road from one town to the next, and the apostles yell out because Yeshua was up front with Andrew and Peter, and this one was in the back, it was Thomas, and he would yell out, and he said, oh, Yeshua, can we stop a minute? I'll go off at the side of the road. I have to use the bathroom.
Believe you.
Well, you think about it.
You can take the fane and the profane and put it into one sentence.
The fane and the profane. I think that's good to have that combination. It shouldn't feel so lonely by themselves, the fane and the profane. And the fane was so glad because it didn't really know what it meant. Fane, who's fane? When they got it together with pro, they made like a marriage between the two. So you had pro and fane, and they became profane.
And
that's right. But they weren't happy that because they wanted to meet their counterparts, which was the say and cred, because cred didn't have any name until he met say. And they got together, and they became say cred. And that's how that came about.
Rabbi, I think you're spending too much time with Errol.
I wouldn't know. I'm happy to spend all the time you can give me. But I would say this, speaking as a Jew, that this person came because we were looking for the Messiah, and most Jews don't think he was the Messiah. They're still waiting for the Messiah. Although I think Kirk Douglas has a possibility there because he had all the right chutzpah. But for those of us who are open-minded, like my friend Martin Buber, who says all real living is meeting, and I think that's what the Jesus, the Yeshua, was trying to say to us and show us, meet. And that's why he started the new website called Meetup. No? Okay, well, I may not have that right because
I was with you until you started being silly.
Was there ever a time when I wasn't silly?
No, but I mean, you were saying something that I was really listening to, and I wanted to hear more of it. And then you walked off the road to pee.
I'll say this one more thing. The biggest lesson that this man embodied and taught, whether you believe in him or not, he showed us how faith works, that a life that's based on faith. To me, he was the greatest teacher of faith and how it works. If you want to have some good faith and a good way of using it and how it really works, go to Jesus. Oh, Jesus, you're happy to give him a little faith guidance? Of course he says yes. Amen. Thank you, Rabbi. I was able to follow most of that. I wasn't sure if I felt comfortable about your saying he spends too much time with me, like that was a bad thing. And I'm feeling a little,
You know, when he gets silly and goofy.
But I feel not respected for that part, and I wonder if he feels not respected. Oh, don't worry about me. I always feel respected because I don't look outside myself for respect. Because chances are, it's not going to be coming. I got my own respect.
Aha. Thank you, Rabbi. I appreciate it because that's real. I meant no disrespect. So if it was taken that way, I can't own it.
This is Inside Out, The Naked Truth. It's December 2016. And we've got some challenges coming up. And next year, as we start into 2017, we're going to pay close attention to the dynamics of what's going on in this world. And this is a good time to stoke up the faith and to stoke up the humor, because some things you're not going to be able to deal with them except with humor. And you've always got a great source of humor available to you any time you want. And that is yourself. Just watch your mind and look at the conclusions it comes to, the craziness that can come through it, the prejudice, the judgment, the denial, the attack, the jealousy, all those traits. But what do we know about them? It's just fear.
Fear likes to be separated. Fear doesn't like union. And love really is about unions. Obviously, if fear doesn't like union, it makes all that sense, since it's not love. The only way I know, Errol, how to get out of it is to love the fear. Just put my arms around it. Oh, you're frightened, aren't you, sweet little girl? There you are, judging everybody because you're afraid to come into union with them. And oh, yes, you little girl. Oh, look at you. You're so cute. How scared you are of being like everybody else, so you're going to stand out no matter what. And then you're going to judge everybody who stands out because you're so afraid they'll see you and not like you.
Who's that?
Anybody. I'm just talking about fears that I have. You realize that all good movies are based on fears.
They wouldn't have any tension. I had a revelation this week that was breakthrough in consciousness. One of the things that we wrestle with and have addressed on this show numerous times and continue to behold it is that life is essentially non-dualistic. One of the things I appreciate about the Yeshua that comes through in the writings of Glenda Green, that he specifically says, I came here to end dualism as it has transpired in this world.
And it doesn't take just 2,000 years. It takes a lot longer than that.
And as I'm fond of saying to my friends, when you step in the do duality, don't get it all over yourself. It stinks.
That's a good one, though. Give you that.
Okay. The realization that I had was, going back to the question, how was it that duality should even show up? It's very apparent. It's making a lot of noise. Duality, you see it everywhere, all the time.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, exactly. Then I thought to myself, why? It's an illusion. What's the illusion about it? It's a reality that's, by and large, predicated on the assumption that everything is actually separate from each other. That's an illusion because nothing can actually be separate from each other. But by creating this illusion, the universe offered us the opportunity to do something in a way that was kind of brand new. And that is to discover relationship. That relationship emerged. If there was at the beginning the one, and then it created the illusion that was separate so that it could come back together and behold itself anew in relationship.
That's a pretty picture. I like it. That's nice.
So that's what it means to transform the illusion. It's kind of like a scaffolding of a building. Once you got the relationship, you won't need the seduction and the illusion delusion of dualism anymore.
The wake-up call is you're in judgment. So the minute you realize you're in judgment, which creates the separation, you can just put your arms around the judgment and go into relationship with it.
Oh, Jesus. But you've got to get very conscious.
Of course you do. You have to get conscious. But I do believe that it is all about relationship, and it's the very act of coming into union with another human being that creates a third. That's what happens. That's what we're meant for, is to continually create ourselves in a way. And each time that we created, each generation that passes, something greater happens. It's expanded. The consciousness of humans are expanded. But it takes a long time in human mind. It's a short time in universe time, but in human mind, it's a really long time. We look at 5,000, how many years have we been here talking humans?
About 3 years. 4 years.
We haven't been on this planet very long. It takes a while to create a consciousness that knows that they are love and that all they're here to do is breathe in and breathe out love. Everything is possible in the moments of true union, all creation takes place.
There you have it. Boy, isn't that something? That makes me want to celebrate Jesus. So let's do that. Let's just take us in. Did I say a sin?
That's you said take us in, but it sounded like a sin.
Why these things?
Angels of Mercy. Yeah. Uh-huh. Now, wouldn't you like to get to know someone who inspired and triggered that kind of energy?
Yeah.
Come on.
Absolutely. That was fun.
Where'd you get that? He says, some guy who walks up to this group called Angels of Mercy. I always like to tell people this because I love the fact that we had this opportunity. We did a program up in Wisconsin for the Franciscan Sisters of the Perpetual Adoration. Not many guys could say that. There we were.
What's more, not many guys could say they played volleyball with the sisters.
And even fewer guys could say that they danced the part of Jesus in this piece that I wrote. And at that time, Rochelle read it. It wouldn't be fully celebrating the phenomenon of Jesus if I didn't share this poem that I wrote, which is probably my most intimate and soul-articulated understanding of who he was. And it's called Jesus Modeled for Our Class Today. Jesus modeled for our class today. Naked in his open-palmed innocence. We had never seen such a model before. He even brought with him his own light. We all hope to capture the exquisite symmetry of his person. With our colors, shadings, and lines, each thought to copy him perfectly, or at least to the letter, coming at him from so many different angles, places, filters, distances, and time. His form twisted and contorted for us in beautifully agonized ways. And we were amazed to see him take on so many postures, having only the image of his outstretched arms and funneled feet for a reference. He would often smile, observing our childish efforts to grasp and bind him to a single vision on our canvases, leaving us frustrated in our vain attempts to concretize his figure, to make it fit our available shapes. His attitude towards us never changed, though he'd hold a given pose interminably, as much chance as we needed to perceive him. He never tired of standing before us, so that we might see his many-faceted being, the richness, the depth, the light, the shadows. He revealed both softness and strength. The earthiness of his feet planted firmly on the ground, and the expansiveness of his brow reaching to forever. His virile arms, gliding legs, majestic torso, and the hands. We were so distracted by the holes in his hands, and the many little faces that appeared in his palms, shuddering. But his eyes would call us away from the holes, inviting each artist to focus on the transcendent luster in them, beyond the color of red and the limited portrait of death. He was undoubtedly the best image we had ever seen, as there was no shame in him. So boldly presenting his being exposed before us, he challenged us to bear our own. We dreaded for class to end, for here was a model who combined the humble textures of humanity with the statuesqueness of a god. As I looked around the room at each easel, the pictures were as varied as infinity, but in each there was a light gilded to his chest. As we ended the class, we beseeched our model, "What do we call the painting? What is its title?" "Self-portrait," he replied, with a divine twinkle in his eyes. I'm going to give special thanks to Charles Mozell, who collaborated with me to create that music. It was a wonderful partnership. We really worked together, and I haven't heard that in such a long time that it was really new to me to listen to it tonight and to listen to what he did with it. If you send me an email, estrider@gmail.com, I will send you the piece, and you can read it yourself out loud. Eastrider@gmail.com.
Oh, that's great. Take him up on it. It's a Christmas present. I was thinking how difficult that is for most people to realize that that's what he came to teach. He came to teach me who I truly was. And that's not my name and all the stuff I've done in my life and everything.
He wasn't here to give you a new resume.
To teach that I was love and what that meant. And I certainly didn't know it when I started out on this journey with this teacher. But the interesting thing was it took years for me to ask the question, what are you going to teach me? I'm going to be your teacher. What are you teaching me? You know,
it was about 26 years later, she went, "Oh, Jesus, by the way."
But I heard the same voice saying, "Love, that I'm here to teach you to be a lover."
So here's a perspective I'd like to especially share with my Christian brothers and sisters. One of the things that's apparent to me, to all those of you who really love and are just so excited, inspired by Jesus, and you want to share it, you want to evangelize the world. What I've observed about many of you, many Christians, is that you have an amazing gift of having found the Christ in Jesus and to recognize that. This is what I want to ask you. Have you recognized that that same Christ is in you? You are invited to show up and be as Jeshua, not always necessary to defer to him as this other being, but to recognize that you are that. Especially, as we pointed out, if you enter a relationship. As a matter of fact, I created a visual of that. If you go to my Facebook, Errol Strider, you'll see a picture that really represents that. So check it out. In the meantime, Christmas is coming. We got shopping. We got gift wraps. We've got presents. We're planning on dinners. Let's get to the practical side. But again, we got to thank Jesus for being a catalyst for getting all these families together once a year.
And making money every year. This is the part that I don't really like very much. I get caught up in it because I like to bestow presents, and this gives me an opportunity to do so. When I walk into a store, I don't see happy people. Everybody looks pressured. Everybody looks like their face is lined. Except I have to share this story because this is a beautiful Christmas story. I went into a store, and what I wanted was just a little bit higher than I could reach. Now, I'm tiny. I'm 4'10 at this point in my life. And that, in most people's eyes, is tiny. I call myself petite. Never mind. I couldn't reach it. And there was a lady, not much taller than me, but just tall enough that I knew she could get it. She was there, and I said, "Excuse me, do you think you could get this item for me?" She came over, and she got on her tiptoes, and she got it. And I said, "Thank you so much." She said, "Are you kidding? You have no idea how happy you've made me. This is the first time ever I was taller than somebody."
She said that?
Yes, that I was able to get something that you couldn't get. She said, "I feel elated." And I thought, how lovely. I says, "Well, then this is what we've done for each other for Christmas." And she said, "Absolutely." Well, a few moments later, we get online to buy our purchases. And there's four cashiers open because this place is packed with people. All of a sudden, somebody opens a line. She is in front of me, and they say, "Come on over here." And she says, "You go first." I said, "Why?" She said, "Because you gave me something wonderful today." And I looked at her, and I said, "Ah, what a wonderful Christmas." She smiled and I smiled. I'll probably never see her again, but it was just so joyous. And I thought, this is what Christmas is.
That's the Christmas spirit.
That's really what it is. Not even looking at each other, pretending you're not there. You want to get out of the store as fast as you can, complete your list, you know, whatever. There's this obligation that is what upsets me so much.
What it reminds me of is this sense that it brightens up our life. Like, here's an example of how it brightens up our life. This is someone you'll recognize, partner. Here we go.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Good tidings we bring to you and your kin. And we wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Good tidings we bring to you and your kin. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Thank you, Willie Nelson and his sister.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, she was on the piano. Wasn't
that
cool?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that was very cool. I love Willie Nelson. Talking about cool, I think Willie Nelson is really cool.
He's this wonderful combination of
really
this
cool
hippie, and yet he's a mainline popular singer. Good for you, Willie Nelson.
And you always feel the hippie.
We play one of his songs on the show once before where he sang about drugs, had some interesting things to say about them.
What I get when you try to organize the truth, when you try to put it into capsules, it loses something. It's because the truth is expansive and it wants to make you expansive. So you have to be asked to live it or it doesn't work. Every time you live it and every time you breathe it out, you're planting the seeds for someone else. Because that's what inspiration is all about. Like that encounter in the grocery store. That's what it's about. What are you going to say about it? You can tell the experience, but the feeling is just so big, it's hard to even talk about it. But it's there.
Oh, darling, this is Father O'Malley. And I think you're talking about what he referred to as the pearl of great price, that you'll pass up everything for it. And I think you described it and spoke of it and even better experienced it there, darling. And that was service. That the pearl of great price is the joy you feel when you're of service. If you're trying to get everything instead of just being of service, and by the way, mind you, as Ariel said earlier in the beginning of the program, how do I serve myself and others? So you're included in that service. So it's not either or. What people are going to find, the more we mature, the more we find it's not an either-or universe, in spite of people's opinions that it may be. It's a yes-and universe. So my advice here for this next year is when things come up that you want to react to and kind of resist and go on either-or, you better do it this way or that way or that's going to happen. No. Just walk up to it and say, huh, I hear and see what you're up to, and have you considered this? And that's really what he meant by turning the other cheek. He didn't really mean turning your buttocks, although a lot of...
Father!
Not well. Some people take it on a more literal side, and I understand that. But he really meant respond positively to someone who may not have your best interest at heart or body. Anyway, this is Father O'Malley. I wanted to just jump in here and wish you a wonderful, happy Christmas and a beautiful Hanukkah. Same day this year. Oh, I think that's just joyful. Love it.
Thank you, Father O'Malley.
You're welcome, darling. And I look forward to talking to you in the new year.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Father. That was good. That's just so great to be reminded of just what you said. He ostensibly was this integration of this God-man being. It showed us that's what's available to each of us. That's the relationship that we get joined to. Like he says, Yeshua, you are the love, but when you choose the love as well as being the love, then you are given command of your life, command of the universe, because at that point, all your choices will be choices of love, and the universe has
right.
No resistance
and
to that.
And that's like a map that tells you how to get there or where you're going anyway. But then there's the moment-to-moment living where we get to practice that. It's in what might seem like mundane things to people. In fact, even if we can celebrate the mundane, you're really there.
And even it can be very horrifying and terrible and painful experiences. We can handle it. Although I imagine some torturous situations that
like
I
you live through nightly.
Well, no, nothing like that. We won't go there. But I think that's the other thing that he embodied, and we'll cover this more at Easter time, is when you
surrender.
We're
in class now, boys and girls. We'll cover this more. Well, Easter, do forget to come back and bring your card with you.
If you go to our site, we'll send you the syllabus. And I like just saying it, syllabus. People who have sibilant are good at syllabus.
Never mind.
This is Inside Out, The Naked Truth. It's December 20th. So we want to thank our sponsors, our good friend Jeremy Bede, Go Raw, which makes the most righteous, natural, organic, raw food that's tasty and good for you. And thank you for being our sponsor for another year. This will be finishing our third year coming up very soon.
Yes, it will be. And I really appreciate being given a medium in which to speak our truth. Because our truth is so naked.
Oh, Jesus. I almost forgot to mention the naked part of the truth. Rochelle is making signs to me. Oh, Jesus, it's time to go. All right. Rochelle, what do we have to remember?
We have to remember that resistance is what we add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more.
Oh, Jesus.